This is Shamir Young, bringing you the Pro Photographer Journey Podcast. Listen in as award-winning photographers discuss how they find opportunities, market their talent, and overcome mistakes to become respected, ever-advancing professional creatives. You'll also hear about their hard-learned lessons, as well as tips for making awesome images. You ready to take your photography business to the next level? Let's do it. And if you haven't already, be sure to pick up your free photography business bundle at prophotographerjourney.com/freebusinessbundle. It's 4 weeks of helpful free gifts delivered every 7 days directly to your email inbox. The first thing you'll get is the PDF e-guide titled 12 Common Business Tips and Mistakes Photographers Wish They'd Known Before Going Pro. And believe me, I've made quite a few of these mistakes myself. After that, you'll get a new free gift every week that will help you propel your photography business forward. So head on over to prophotographerjourney.com/freebusinessbundle and get yours today. Also, if you're enjoying this podcast, please leave a review in iTunes or Stitcher or wherever you're listening. The more reviews I get, the easier it is for people to find this podcast in search rankings. And I want to reach as many people as possible. So again, please leave a review. I really appreciate it. All right, let's get to the interview. Hey everybody, I'm here with Chris Corradino. Chris is a professional photographer and head student mentor at the New York Institute of Photography. Now, just to give you a little bit of background about Chris, his work has been published internationally with credits including USA Today, The Wall Street Journal, New York Newsday, and National Geographic Online. Yes, Chris, I am bragging about you. Welcome to the show.
Thanks so much, Tamir. How are you?
I am excellent. How are you doing?
Doing great. I'm happy to be here.
And just for us to picture you then, are you in New York right now?
I am in Manhattan right now.
Ah, so you, I'm in Michigan. So we probably have somewhat similar weather as far as slightly cold.
Yeah, slightly cold, but we're getting towards spring. So I'm happy about that.
I can't wait. We actually had our first day of spring here and then we had snow in parts of the state.
Right, right. It always happens. Yeah, March is a tough month.
Yeah, yeah. But now let's talk about you, because sure. I have checked out your work online, and I am quite impressed, and I definitely want the listeners to get to know you. So give us an overview of yourself and your background and how you ended up doing what you do today.
Sure. You know, photography is something that I've always been passionate about, and that goes way back to the days of slide film. I started out with a little point-and-shoot camera, just trying to capture nature. Mm-hmm. I was always really inspired by the outdoors, and I knew that I needed a real camera in order to really bring to life the vision that I saw in my mind. So I invested in basic Canon Rebel film camera, and I enrolled in the New York Institute of Photography's course because I knew I needed some of the technical details. I wanted to learn like the terminology of photography and go beyond just trying to take nice looking photos. So I enrolled in that course, and it helped a great deal. Really what made the biggest difference was going out on my days off, and this was when I worked as a customer service agent in some company somewhere. I would go out on my days off and just shoot pictures. I would take long hikes with my camera, take a notebook, jot down little notes about apertures and shutter speeds, and you know, I would spend time at the local library reading any photography book that I possibly could get my hands on. So I just completely immersed myself in the world of photography. And if I wasn't out there shooting, I wasn't really happy. I wanted a camera in my hand at all times. So I set my goal on becoming a professional photographer. And it's something that took some time to achieve, but I was finally able to make that transition.
Awesome, awesome. And you mentioned the New York Institute of Photography. How long, what kind of program specifically were you enrolled in there?
I was enrolled in their complete course in professional photography. And that starts out with some of the basics of exposure. And then it gets into things like composition, studio lighting, portraiture. So it really had me expanding my vision, trying different things, because I was really all about the outdoor and nature, and the course kind of forced me to try some different types of photography, like portraiture, which I still use today.
And even studio lighting, that stands out to me, because that's something that I think a lot of beginning photographers are kind of afraid of, you know, dealing with all those lights.
Yeah, it can be complicated. And what I always try to say is, you know, start out with one light and then build from there, rather than just making it too complicated from the get-go.
Yeah, yeah. And it's definitely good to have the basics down, for sure, in general, as far as the craft of photography is concerned.
If you look at, you know, an outdoor photographer, you're working with one source of light. I mean, it's the sun, you know. So for studio lighting, to start with one light is a great place to be. And then from there, once you master that one light, then you could start adding fill and background lights, and sort of fine-tuning your look.
Definitely, definitely. And just so we're on the same page then, what area of photography do you call your expertise today?
I really call my expertise travel. Travel photography is something I'm just super passionate about. I try to get out on the road as often as possible, and explore beyond just the grand landscapes, but the way that people fit into these landscapes. You know, the human element is something that I try to include in my work. A beautiful rainbow is certainly a wonderful capture, but if I can get a picture of somebody looking up, enjoying that rainbow, now I have a really saleable image, something that could work for stock or something that could be sold as a piece of fine art. And not saying that, you know, natural landscapes can't, but by adding a human element, you certainly do broaden your horizons.
For sure, for sure. And I'm curious, so you mentioned selling your photos as stock photos. I noticed on your website you also have ebooks. What are the main ways that you're making income for your business?
You know, I do a great deal of mentoring. So I bring students to places like Tuscany or, you know, the Mediterranean, these beautiful European countries, and I teach them how to use their camera, whether it's an iPhone or a mirrorless camera or a DSLR. I'm teaching them how to take better pictures, how to master the camera, how to master their vision. And most of these people are super passionate about taking pictures, but just need a little help getting beyond, you know, the problematic aspects of depth of field and histograms and white balance. And these are all sort of, while these are really important, photography is so much more than just the technical details. It's a truly fine art. So I try to get people to really dive into their own vision and bring out what they see in their mind.
Excellent. And that's such a great point. That's actually, that's kind of a quotable moment. You're saying that photography is so much more than the technical details. We are truly artists, and it's our ability to bring these things together. Even you talking about the rainbow and then adding the element of a person in it, it's the self-expression, an expression of the world around us that really, I don't know, I love it. It's just, you're right, it's so much more than a camera. It's what we bring to the table as artists ourselves.
Absolutely. You know, I've seen people take amazing photos with, you know, a camera that was on automatic, you know, or program mode. I've seen people take publishable photos with their phones. And I've seen people with really high-end DSLRs take poor photos, you know. So it's really up to us to, you know, get beyond the technical details and start to perfect your mind's eye, seeing creatively. And if you can put yourself anywhere and find interesting things to photograph, I think you're ahead of the game. There was a photographer, Ernst Haas, very famous photographer, who had this quote that really changed my life, where he said, "There's only you and your camera. The limitations within yourself, there's you and your camera. The limitations in your photography are within yourself, for what we see is what we are."
Wow. Wow.
You know,
if you hear scribbling and writing over here, I am furiously taking notes. Yes.
You know, it's just when I first started out, I was always looking for that perfect light, the perfect sunset. You know, but things in life are never really perfect. The exact moment that you're looking for may not develop. And as a photographer, you can walk away empty-handed, or you can do what Haas was talking about and say, hold on, you know, the limitations here are not in the scene, they're within me. What can I make anyway, despite this situation? What can I create that will be worthwhile? And usually if you push yourself, you can find something amazing just about anywhere.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so here's a question for you. How do you get yourself inspired for a particular photo project, be it a group that you're going to travel with to a certain destination or location? How do you find inspiration for your work?
You know, I mean, with the internet, obviously, there are so many ways to research. And I go well beyond page one of Google. You know, I'll dig down to page 8 or 9. I'm looking at people's blogs, people's Flickr pages. I'm looking at Google Earth and photo ephemeris, looking at times of sunset, times of, you know, the moon phase. I'm looking at images from amateur photographers to professional photographers, just to get ideas of what people have shot. Not that I'm looking to copy it, but I just want to have a better understanding of the area before I'm actually there, so I can start to pre-visualize what I would like to do. You know, so that's just a start. Of course, you know, looking at different photo books is helpful, but also just immersing yourself in the actual culture. Like before I went to Italy, I made sure that I learned a bit of the language so that I could communicate with these people a little better. And I think they appreciated that and therefore welcomed me into some of the deeper parts of their country, so that I could really get a unique feel, an authentic feel for what they had to offer.
That is so cool. Yeah, I'm slightly jealous. You getting to travel all around the world.
You know, it's an amazing world. It's amazing. The country, just the United States it's just astounding, the amount of beauty that we have here. But to get away from this country and start crossing seas like the Mediterranean and, you know, all of these places, you really feel small. You really get this feeling that, wow, the world that we live in is just unbelievable.
Now, next, Chris, I want to ask you about your typical go-to gear. I kind of like to call this section the tools of the trade in my notes. And I don't like to linger on it too long, because I think there's so much more that goes into a strong photograph, in addition, besides the gear that you're using. But Could you tell us, what is your typical go-to gear?
So my gear has recently changed rather dramatically. I used to shoot with all Canon DSLRs, mm-hmm. and I have since switched completely to an all mirrorless Olympus system. And I've really never been happier. It's such an incredible lightweight solution. Mm-hmm. As far as megapixels, there's more than enough to go around. And as far as lenses, I have everything from a 12 to 40, which translates to a 24 to 80 to 8, to a 40 to 150 with a teleconverter, so that ends up being an 80 to 300 2.8, and then you add the teleconverter and it's over 400 millimeters. And this is in a compact system, which is all carryable in a little waste bag. So it's just it's unbelievable how much I can do with two cameras and two lenses.
You know, I've noticed a movement happening amongst photographers as far as them heading over to mirrorless cameras. And I have to admit, I have a bit of a personal interest as well, because right now I'm shooting with a DSLR. Mm-hmm. And while it's awesome, I am definitely interested in this whole concept of a mirrorless compact camera. What specific Olympus camera are you using?
So I use two. I think it's always important to have a backup camera. So my main camera is the EM1, and then I'm also using the EM10 as the backup. And the truth is, when I'm out shooting and I come home and look at the images, I can't tell which image was taken with which camera unless I'm looking at the EXIF data. I mean, there's just no difference whatsoever. And I mean, I'm a bit of a pixel peeper. I'll look at things at 100%. You know, I'm a real stickler for sharpness and all of that. Mm-hmm. But these cameras are just incredible. And I've made huge blow-ups. I've sold to major stock agencies that wanted 50 megabyte files, and there has been no issue whatsoever. And we're talking about micro four-thirds sensors here, not wow. full frame. I mean, micro four-thirds. And the reason I stress that is because then the lenses can be smaller. Mm-hmm. So that means I can go further. I can hike, you know, deeper into the woods. I can get on smaller planes and get into more remote areas. So it really is a difference maker.
Yeah. And, you know, I think I've mentioned this on the podcast before, but I have a friend who does, well, many friends who do wedding photography, but one in particular, he has an excellent camera, but it's big and it's heavy. And he started having shoulder problems because of his camera. And even thinking myself traveling around the U.S., my camera can get heavy. And so I really like how you pay attention to the type of equipment that you carry, and that it also, it coincides well, it goes along well with your lifestyle choice as far as traveling. And like you said, being able to hike farther and just being able to do more because your equipment is lightweight and your human body can take it.
You know, one of my favorite photographers was the late Galen Rowell, mm-hmm. who, you know, I'm sure you've seen some of his books. I know he wrote for Outdoor Photographer for a long time. He said that he felt all of his work, his best work, could have been captured between 24 millimeters and 200 millimeters. So he would pack super light, one tripod, and just, I mean, he was a phenomenal photographer. So I sort of modeled my own kit after that. I wanted to be really agile. I wanted to be able to climb up steep mountains, get places fast, and go beyond the parking lot, you know?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so what's your favorite photography accessory other than your camera? And tell us why.
The tripod, by far. I mean, the tripod just opens up so many new worlds. And now with, you know, features like live composite mode and, you know, or as an example, the bulb mode, where you can take a 45-minute exposure of the stars swirling around. Mm-hmm. It just gives you so many different possibilities that that you're missing out if you're hand-holding.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I felt a little funny when I was in Las Vegas, of all places. You know, I'm walking around with this Gitzo tripod, you know, and everyone else is walking around with like their beer, you know? And I'm just looking to take these super long exposures. And they were looking at me like I was the crazy one, but I was having fun. So.
Oh, that's so funny. Was this recently that you were in Vegas?
Yeah, it was just a few weeks ago for a convention, a photo convention.
WPPI.
Yep, that was it.
I was totally there.
Oh,
and,
wow.
And we did a photo walk in Vegas. It was Monday night, actually.
Okay.
And were you on that photo walk? Wouldn't that be
I don't think so. I'm like a lone ranger. I was out by myself.
Well, if you saw a group of people with our tripods, we headed out of the MGM Grand and we headed down the strip. And I totally see your point, because at least there was a group of us with our tripods, but we were still kind of odd in that there were other people walking around, you know, for other reasons besides taking photos and, sure. You know, people talking about strip clubs and drinking and gambling. And here we are, you know, looking through our cameras and nerding out in an awesome way.
Totally.
Yeah. Yeah.
What you know, in that world. After the strip, I had the chance to rent a car and get out into Death Valley and some of those other places. And it's just, again, it's so great to get, you know, out into the woods, be isolated, find photos, spend time with your camera, and just your thoughts. You know, in a place like Death Valley is so, you know, it's just so interesting. And to shoot it was a real honor. So I loved it out there.
Oh, how cool. Are those photos on your website?
I've recently put them on my blog. They're not in the galleries yet.
I'll have to check out your blog then. Very cool.
Thank you.
Next, let's touch briefly on your workflow after you take your photos. Could you describe to us what your photo processing workflow is like as far as the software that you use, how you organize the photos?
Definitely. So I import everything into Lightroom. From there, I will do most of my editing in Lightroom. Mm-hmm. I don't use Photoshop anymore. Mm-hmm. I can't remember the last time I opened Photoshop. So everything is done through Lightroom, but there are some occasions where I really enjoy this software from Alien Skin. It's called Exposure. Mm-hmm. And you know, it gives you these really amazing, like, fine-tuning possibilities where you can do things like boost the reds while holding back everything else. It's incredible. So I've done some comparisons of photos that I've edited in Lightroom to the best of my ability, and then a photo that I edited in Alien Skin, and many times the Alien Skin version will be the better version.
Wow.
So yeah, I'm starting to really incorporate that more and more into my workflow.
I totally second Alien Skin, actually. I use that as a plugin to Photoshop. And okay. I do the bulk of my editing in Lightroom, but I inevitably end up in Photoshop. And then there's Alien Skin. Yeah, it is quite powerful and awesome. Just the possibilities that it opens up as far as applying. Even I like the way you can apply specific styles to your photos.
Different film types.
Oh my goodness. It's
amazing. And now with their latest version, you can use it as a standalone, so you don't even need it as a plugin.
Oh, I like that. I like that. They get very specific. I'm thinking of one of their styles. It's even, I think it was like potato sack something, like incorporating the texture of the sack that some type of the, I don't know, the bag that holds potatoes or something. It was grainy. It was so neat.
Yeah, it's almost limitless what you can do. I mean, limited by your imagination, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Hey, photographers. I want to pause and take a quick second to tell you about the New York Institute of Photography at nyip.edu. It's an online school for students who want to learn photography from the comfort of their own home on their own time. Not only is the New York Institute of Photography the world's largest online photography school, but they've been in business for over 100 years. Yes, you heard that right, 100 years. Originally established in 1910, they got their start as a brick-and-mortar school. Fast forward to today, and the New York Institute of Photography is now an online school where you can study anytime, anywhere, and at your own pace. Every student gets a personal pro photographer mentor who will review your photos and help you improve. You can choose from 9 online courses based on your skill level and area of interest. They have courses on digital photography fundamentals, wedding photography, travel photography, photojournalism, marketing, and more. To view the free course catalog and daily specials, check out the New York Institute of Photography at www.nyip.edu. Again, that's www.nyip.edu. Now, next, let's get into running your photography business. And I especially like this part of the conversation because I believe that this is what most creatives struggle with. It's what I have historically struggled with. And many other photographers say the same thing. And so I love diving deep into how you make your business work. Sure. So could you tell us what's the most challenging aspect of being in business for yourself and how do you overcome that?
I think the most challenging aspect is just making time for yourself where you're not working. I feel like I work pretty much 7 days a week, you know, and I'm on call almost 24/7. And that's a challenge, you know, to balance that with family life and friends, and just having some downtime. It's important. So one of the things that I do now is I try to dedicate at least one day for myself. Usually it's Sunday, mm-hmm. where, you know, I'm not necessarily answering emails, and I'm not scheduling photo shoots, and, you know, I get back to everybody starting on Monday. It's just a way to sort of refresh and recharge. But other aspects of business can be challenging as well, like taxes and business forms. So one of the books that I found that was really helpful, it's not a photography book, it's just a business book. It's called The Small Business Bible. All sorts of great information for people starting out, you know, as like a sole proprietor or an LLC. And that really helped me, you know, to sort of realize how to set things up in a way that would be sustainable.
Do you remember who wrote that book?
The Small Business Bible. The author's name sort of eludes me, but you can definitely find it on Amazon.
Okay. Yeah, I will Google that, actually. I will include that in the show notes. Ah, it says Stephen D. Strauss.
There you go.
Excellent. And you make a great point about making time for yourself, actually, because I have seen many a photographer burn out, mm-hmm. and that always affects your business. Many of us step into this thinking that we're going to get to do more of what we love, which is take photos. But the reality is when you want to make a business out of it, there are other things that have to be done as well. And then we find ourselves getting overwhelmed or working, like you said, 7 days a week, what feels like 24/7. And oftentimes we burn out, which is something I seem to go through that actually periodically every 6 months, it seems. And the thing is, when you burn out, your work suffers, the quality of your mindset suffers. And I believe if it gets bad enough, you actually end up making less money. And so it's so true that in order to have a sustainable business for the long run, you actually have to take some time to just refresh yourself.
You know, one of the things that I like to do to refresh is just look to the other arts, you know, whether it be painting, mm-hmm. or a big one for me is music. Mm-hmm. There's not a day that goes by when I don't have headphones in and I'm listening to several albums. It just inspires me, and I think that we're all so connected. Even if your medium is different than mine, we can certainly inspire each other. So,
absolutely.
You know, just reading books, magazines, listening to music, watching films, traveling, those are all ways to just recharge.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Next, are you able to tell us what you have found to be the most effective techniques as far as getting new assignments or facilitating the process of making money off of your photos? Because this is something that photographers across the board really struggle with.
Sure. I mean, making money with your photography is a dream for so many people, but they don't necessarily understand how to get the people to their website. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I have a gallery of images on my site, but if I'm not coming up on page one, you're not going to find me, you know, so I'm not going to make sales. So I think really the biggest way to facilitate sales is by learning SEO, mm-hmm. search engine optimization, learning how to build a website with a blog and a store in a way that gets people to your site so that you are coming up on page one, using social media to help with that. And it's hard work. You know, it's definitely something that requires daily attention, building a following, keeping the pulse on your blog up to date, making good use of Google Analytics and all of that. You know, without it, I just think that you fall into the noise of the web, which is seemingly endless.
So true. And oftentimes when you build a website and then do nothing else, people will not come. So if you build it, they will not necessarily come there. You still have to take proactive action on a daily basis. I was actually talking to photographer Scott Bourne. We've had him on the show, and he puts out a photo on social media, at least one photo, faithfully every day. And he takes these amazing photos of birds. He loves birds. And he puts out awesome photos every day. And so we're friends on Facebook. And so I always see his photo pop up in my feed. I'm like, oh, that guy is so dedicated.
Absolutely. And you have to be, you know, if this is something that you want to do, it's work. You know, it may be your passion, but it's also work. And to put up a photo every day is a great thing. To write a monthly newsletter is another good thing. You have to treat this like a business if you want to succeed and make money in it. So it's fun. It's a challenge. And I tell people, if this is something that you really love, it's not really work. It's something that you wouldn't mind doing. You know, like I wouldn't mind standing outside on a rainy day with my camera because it's something that I love doing. Just the same as I don't mind putting in the effort to write a monthly newsletter because I'm communicating with people. I love it. I'm keeping in touch with my followers. So it's a wonderful thing. I'm so glad that I get to do this.
Absolutely. And I think a big part of it too is getting in the habit of doing it as well. You mentioned you take the time to write out a monthly newsletter every month, I'm sure. And as far as putting out posts on your website, it can seem overwhelming to a lot of people, especially if it's something that's not already incorporated into your workflow. But when you're able to do it in such a way where it eventually becomes a habit that gets ingrained within you, I think that it'll be easier in the long run. I say this for those who may be listening and thinking, oh, I don't have time to do a newsletter, or I don't have time to put out blog posts. If you're able to incorporate that, make that a set part of your workflow and get in the habit of doing it, then it's something that you absolutely consistently can do and should do.
Yeah, and if you look at, you know, technology now, we have so many tools, you know, whether it be an iPad or, I mean, I think most people commute to work, you know, about an hour each way. That could be a good time to maybe, if you're driving, just dictate some voice recordings perhaps. Or if you're taking a train or a plane, great time to type out some blog posts. So yeah. I try to just make good use of all of my time.
Yeah, and one thing that I have found helpful is I use Hootsuite. There are other, I guess, apps or software out there, some services similar to that. But I find it helpful to schedule out a series of posts in advance for social media and even on WordPress, which I use WordPress quite a bit. And so I'll schedule posts in advance. For example, these podcast episodes, because I know that I tend to get quite scatterbrained and busy. And so if I'm not using these tools to schedule things in advance, a week in advance, a month in advance, sometimes several months in advance, I know that it may not happen. So I have to do it.
Right. And you can even do it on Facebook, which is another way to give yourself a break. You know, I can schedule the next week of posts and not log into Facebook for a week if I so chose. So it's, again, using technology to your benefit.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Next, let's talk about lessons that you've learned while you've run your business.
Sure.
What have you found to be the most common mistake that either you have made or you notice other professional photographers have made? And how do you overcome that mistake?
You know, I think a lot of people get carried away with like watermarks and like, I don't want people to steal my photos.
Yeah.
And, you know, what I say is, listen, forget about that right now. Focus on making images that people want to steal. You know, something that's just so good that people say, wow, I want that, or I wish I took that. That's going to set you apart more than some fancy watermark. Another thing I've learned is it's a small industry, and to get ahead, it helps to be a nice person, you know? Just I honestly believe that nice people finish first in this industry rather than last, because you make good friends, you make connections, and you never know where things are going to go. So, you know, if you feel like you're just going to, you know, trample over the competition and rise to the top, it's not necessarily how things work in this business.
I like to say it's about collaboration, not competition.
There you go.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I believe that when we help each other, it also helps the industry, the photography industry as a whole, improve.
Right. And that's what we all need. You know, we are a community of artists with like-minded goals. So to raise the whole bar is definitely a worthy goal.
Yeah. Yeah. And you mentioned watermarks as far as people being afraid of getting their work stolen. And you mentioned that we should get our photos to a point where we want people to want to steal them. I am curious, though, do you take steps to protect your photos?
I really don't. You know, if I feel like if people really want to steal a photo, they're going to. I mean, they could take a screen grab of a shot. So I don't worry about it. For me, the main thing is creating work that I love, that I'm happy with. And if you, you know, feel that you need it for your screensaver, you know, if you love it that much, then hey, I can't really stop you. You know what I mean? There are just so many ways to steal photos. So no, I don't worry about it. I do copyright my work, so I'm protected in that sense. So if you were to use it on a billboard, then I have some, you know, some steps that I can take. But no, I'm not worrying about watermarks or right-click protecting anything. It just doesn't really work.
So what steps do you take to copyright your work?
You know, you send in a collection. I send in a collection every couple of months of the images that I've taken. And it's easy to do. You can put, you know, just put the images on a DVD, mail it in, and that new collection is all copywritten.
Excellent. Excellent. And I know Scott Kelby, he also co-signs on that. At a recent workshop that he had here in Michigan, I was there, and he spent some time talking about how copywriting your work actually can be one of the most important things that you can do. Especially in the case of someone does steal your work, the fact that you have it copywritten on file, that will hold up in court.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, that's the most important thing to me. Because the watermark doesn't necessarily do it. And I don't mean to harp on the watermark. It's just such a common thing that I see and that I hear, you know, and it really doesn't hold much water when it comes to a legal situation.
Exactly, exactly. One thing Scott did mention, though, was that if you do have even just a little watermark down on the bottom, not that you have to do it every time. I don't even know if he does it all for his photos, but if you have one on there and you copyright your work and someone steals it, if you take that person to court, you have double evidence against them because you have the copyright, but also you would have the original, you know, watermarked photo, and so it would be quite clear that someone tried to crop out your watermark if they tried to do that.
Yeah, it's unfortunate that we even have to have that conversation. But, you know, again, if you're doing work that is so great that people want to steal it, I think you're going in the right direction.
Yeah, yeah. And with this society, with so much photo sharing, I think some people don't even realize, quite frankly.
Sure.
I was talking to a business owner the other day, and he had accidentally... I say accidentally because, well, he purposefully pulled some photos off of a Google search but he didn't realize he wasn't allowed to do that. So in that way, it was an accident. And so we were sitting down, and when I revealed to him that that is not okay, oh, he felt so terrible, and he pulled him off of his website right away. But yeah, a lot of people don't, they don't know, or they don't think about it.
It is unfortunate, but you know, hey, I mean, it's not their industry, so how would they know?
Exactly.
You know, so we can try to educate them, but for the most part, your best bet is just to protect yourself by copyrighting your photos.
Yes, definitely. Definitely. Now, next, tell us, what is one thing you wish you knew before you stepped into photography professionally?
That's a great question. And probably that photo insurance would be a good idea.
Oh.
You know, I've dropped lenses and I've broken equipment when I did not have insurance, and I just had to pay for that out of pocket.
Ouch.
Yeah, you know, it happens, but if I knew that photo insurance would be a good idea, I probably would have saved myself some money.
And if you don't mind me asking, who do you have insurance through?
TCP.
Okay. TCP, what does that stand for?
That's a great question. It's like the something travel photography, you got me, but
well, I didn't know it either. TCP. Okay, very cool. And there are several, more than several places that photographers can go for their insurance, as long as you have it. That's what's important. And it covers your equipment.
That's right. Yeah, you never know when something's going to fall out of a boat or, you know.
Or if you're, have you had that happen to you, by the way?
I've had things fall off of my camera into the bottom of a boat and smash. Yeah, you know.
Oh.
It happens.
Yeah, or if you're on the beach and there's sand everywhere and it gets into your camera.
Right.
And one of my first podcast guests, Ken, no, oh, I'm blanking on his name. Now I have to look it up.
Kaminsky?
I've had him on the show, actually, but he wasn't the first one. I'll be able to tell you. Yeah, we've had Ken. I think we've had multiple Kens on the show. But this one I'm thinking of, he was actually shooting a wedding, a travel destination wedding. Mm-hmm. And his camera, Ken Schultz, there we go. He realized that the sand had gotten into his camera body and ruined the sensor. And this was at the very end of the shoot. And he was able to take the final photo that day. End of the wedding, after the reception, and before he realized what had happened. And so he was able to, oh, yeah, that could have been a much worse situation than it was. But that definitely taught him a lesson, so.
Yeah, there's a lot of lessons that we can learn. And if you go on popular blogs like Petapixel and F-Stoppers, you'll often see these types of mistakes that photographers make. And, you know, hey, we all learn something. I've been doing this for a long time, and I'm still learning. So nobody's immune to mistakes.
Definitely, definitely. I dropped my lens. One of my favorite lenses in my office here, actually. So I wasn't even out in the field, actually. And it just, I still don't know how it happened. And it was my favorite lens, so I have to get it fixed. But yeah, stuff happens. All that to say, stuff happens. So,
absolutely.
Is there a particular photography resource, a tool, an online course, a book, whatever, that you would like to recommend to help our listeners with their photography journey?
Sure. There are so many great books out there. One that I really like for nature and outdoor photographers is the John Shaw Nature Photography Field Guide.
Ah, okay.
He has a terrific way of explaining some complicated technical considerations in a really simple way, like using the zone system for manual metering. So that would be a definite recommendation. Another option, of course, is actual photo school, and there are so many different ones to choose from. The New York Institute of Photography, where I teach, has about 9 different photo courses in everything from the basics to more specific courses like photojournalism or travel photography or weddings or portraits. So there are just so many different things, so many ways to learn, even on YouTube. But if you can immerse yourself in a number of these things, I think your whole education will be full. There's no one right way.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And could you give us the URL of the New York Institute of Photography?
It's nyip.edu.
Doesn't get any easier than that, does it? And finally, my final question, but definitely one of the most important, tell us where we can find you online, Chris.
Sure. So I have a website that's pretty easy to find. It's photomentornyc.com.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, just thank you so much for taking the time to chat with us. We really appreciate it.
Oh, absolutely. This is my pleasure. It was a lot of fun. Maybe we can do it again sometime.
Are you getting ready for your first photo shoot and need to learn some common mistakes to avoid? Or maybe you need to learn how to communicate with your clients and grow your business through email marketing. Or perhaps you're just getting started with your website and you're trying to figure out this WordPress hosting stuff. When you're in business for yourself, it's a lifelong learning process for sure. And that's why I've set up the Pro Photographer Journey Resource Center. You can learn all of this and more through my free and paid self-paced online courses. Each course focuses on these individual topics and is designed to hold your hand every step of the way and help you learn how to run your business more successfully. You'll also find a host of other tools in the Resource Center that are useful for running your photography business, many of which I use myself. From email marketing tools to forming an LLC for your business to cool image editing software, it's there. And wherever possible, I include coupon codes to these online services so that you can grab a discount. So check it out at prophotographerjourney.com/resource-center. That's prophotographerjourney.com/resource-center.